Blog Talk Radio.
In GoPro Radio Land.
Good evening.
I'm here with my co-host, Senior Bland.
Happy New Year to you.
Happy New Year to my
GoPro.
Well,
we have a few hours before New Year.
That's true, but let's wish everybody a happy one anyway.
Happy, healthy
New Year. We have a great show lined up for you this evening. Eugene Drayton, president of the Embattled Hoboken NAACP, will join us on the phone to discuss the effect of gentrification of that city has had on its minority population that's been seriously diminished to make way for the young urban professionals who have more or less taken over there and have become the dominant population in what was once a working class ethnic, mostly Italian, Latino, and African American city. And Mr. Drayton, who was the president of the NAACP in Hoboken, is also a retired Hoboken police officer, and we're going to ask for his take on the controversies which are roiling the country and New York City in particular about the police and the recent spate of police killings that have affected black men and taken some of them off this mortal coil. And we want to talk briefly about a 60-minute segment that's scheduled for Sunday, and a person of interest who was on our show several months ago, Renee Walker.
And a lifetime resident of
Renee
Astor
Walker,
Place.
Right. We're going to get into that. Renee Walker, who was a cast member of the Alive and Kicking,
right,
the play in New York. That play will be featured on 60 Minutes Sunday, and Renee will be one of the people you'll see. And we're urging everyone within the sounds of our voices to be there to watch this. And Renee is also going to be on Facebook afterwards. So we're going to talk a little bit about that. And last but not least, We're going to review the festivities and fun we had at the Ask the Place Neighborhood Association's Christmas Gala held earlier this week. That was tons of fun, great entertainment, good food, and quality fellowship. And if any of you out there in GoPro land feel so moved and to wish everyone a new year, a happy new year, you can call us here at on GoPro's phone line at 714-888-7444. That's 714-888-7444. All right?
And I want you to answer the following question. What do you want in 2015 that you did not have in 2014?
That's right. From here in, we'll shortly have our guest on, Eugene Drayton, who is a lifelong Hudson County resident and has been the NAACP president in Hoboken for some years now. He'll tell us exactly what that's all about and what they're doing there. If Gene is on the air, can we bring him in now? Hello?
Hello?
Gene?
Yes, I'm here.
Happy New Year's Eve. How are you?
Happy New Year's Eve. I'm fine.
Okay, you're on with us on GoPro Radio. We wish we could have gotten you in the studio, but this is just as well. Let's talk a little bit about what's going on in Hoboken. I remember when Hoboken was a ethnic working class Italian village, essentially, with a large Italian population, including the Frank Sinatra,
That's true.
It was mostly Italian, but with a healthy sprinkling of Latinos and African Americans. Then about
very low sprinkling of African Americans.
Yeah. But
we've never had a large population of African Americans, but we, at this point, we only have like 3.5% of the population is African Americans out of a population that is 50,000. So we only have a very few. We've always had a very few. They had a bigger Hispanic community than they did African American.
Well, I remember when the gentrification of Hoboken became a reality. I watched that happen. It was interesting to watch how it unfolded and how slowly the numbers changed and they began to condoize the town, and there were more condos than apartments. And
that's right.
Eventually, everything changed. I remember when as a reporter, I would go to and you know this, Gene, I covered council meetings and zoning board meetings, everything. And I saw, black faces and Latino faces on those commissions. There are none left that I can find. Very, very few of any.
None at all. You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right, Earl.
And what?
Now, at this time, this new administration, it's all gone.
You have a new day. Now, I had a call about 6 months ago, a distress call, from the Hoboken Housing Authority. They seemed to be under some kind of attack from the administration or some kind of change. They wanted to, the Dawn Zimmer administration, Mayor Dawn Zimmer, the mayor of Hoboken, wanted to make some changes on the board of the Housing Authority and the management that would essentially have removed the few blacks that were left there and the few what happened there?
Well, it was a fight. It was a fight with a new administration came in, and you had the administration that was challenging this administration, and there was an open war. And that other side was led by Assemblyman Garcia. And him and the war and the mayor, they were at battle. They were at odds.
Well, there was quite a struggle there. I wrote
the only thing that there was a chairman. The chairman was Robert Davis, and his term was up, and she was going to appoint one of her people as the chair. But he's still on the board now, I think, Robert.
Well,
he got removed as the chairman.
Now, that is, it's interesting because the public housing in Hoboken, which is where most of the minorities now exist and reside, is often a corner of that city. And, you know, I can imagine that the developers are salivating to get their hands on that property, and they can't because it belongs to the federal government. If
that's absolutely correct.
The minority.
What would have happened, you know, all through the years, all through other administrations, the housing authority runs 1,300 and something units in the entire housing authority, and you have four senior citizen building included in that 1,300 units. And, you know, they put condos in the in the parking lot of the project, let's say. All down there now, they have all these condos. And once they start putting the condos in, they've been trying for years to tear down those projects. And they're still trying to do it at this point. Now, there was a the housing authority, under the leadership of Garcia, had a plan to construct, I think it was like 40 units on the, they called the 2020 plan that he was bringing into the project. I didn't totally support this plan, and I'll tell you why. One of the reasons was because I knew that if they would only talk about phase one, they would only talk about phase one of this project. Mm-hmm. My concern, what's going to happen after phase one? Now, you might put 40 units in the project in that parking lot. You may build 40 units. But the city's looking to tear down what they call the four tops. You know the four tops of those four big buildings, Earl?
Right on
Jackson, on Harrison Street, 310 Jackson, 320 Jackson, 311, and 321 Harrison Street. Those units got to have like 300-and-something people in them. All right, those are the units because they have condos in the parking lots of those units. And they're looking to tear those units down. They've been doing it since I was the chairman. All right? I refused to let them tear down when I was there, and that's why I was in a big war and a big battle down at the Housing Authority. And they're still trying to do the same thing. Now, Garcia's intentions were good. Don't get me wrong. His intentions were good. My problem was if you build those 40 units, and that's the first phase, where's phase two and three, and what's going to happen to those four tops? The only answer that I was getting is, well, we have to start somewhere. Okay? Wasn't good enough for me. And so I didn't really support that project.
Well, you know, I'm looking at the way that's structured over in Hoboken. And I can remember, I had a, during Thanksgiving, I had a former resident of Hoboken is one of the guests for Thanksgiving dinner, who didn't happen not to be either black or Hispanic. My daughter's boss, and she said she was living in Hoboken. Somebody I think Tina, you know.
I do.
And she said she had an apartment, and she said one day she comes home, and there are four dead rats in the floor, and she said I don't understand how that could happen because I had three cats. So she said, then the roaches started to show up, and she got the hint, and she left. And she left. The apartment rent doubled and doubled again, and now it's a condo. Now, I remember, Gene, during the time, I guess that was in the 80s when all of that gentrification of Hoboken began.
Right.
Fires in Hoboken. Often,
right.
And most of the time it was involving buildings that were mostly Latino. And I can remember watching the fire department bring out body bags of people to a crisp in those fires. Now they say these are all condominiums.
Right.
This was something like that was happening in Boston, I believe, if you remember. They were doing similar to that, and you know, it was just the most despicable. They were essentially just driving people out.
Right.
Now, with all of this change that's going on, there's one woman whose mother works for the the Hudson County Corrections Department, who shows up at the count the Board of Ed meeting, and I cannot remember that woman's name for the life of me. I know her very well, and she tends to be the only black face you see at a Board of Ed meeting. Let me ask you, what is the student population of Hispanic and African American in the schools? Do you have any idea?
Don't know the exact number, but there's only Hoboken have about a school population of 2,800, Earl. 2,800 at this point. And they're dividing those up into charter schools. Charter schools are taking most of them. So I don't know what the ratio at this point is, okay, how many African-Americans or how many Latinos, but I know it's more Latinos than you have African-Americans that are in the school system. I don't know the exact number now at this point, but I would think it's somewhere around maybe 15, 20% African-American.
That's not very much.
If not,
no. We only got 3% of the population in Hoboken right now, out of 50,000.
Even the private schools are very low in African American attendance, because one of the schools my son attended in Hoboken had two children in the entire school.
Wow. Which one of the schools was that?
The Hudson.
The Hudson School? Yeah, that's a private school. That's a very exclusive school. The Hudson and the Mustard Seed, they're very expensive.
Because some of us can afford, but we're talking about two in an entire school.
Well, it's always, nice to have two.
Nice to have one when you can afford it, But, me personally, I never sent my kids to public school. My kids went to private school. I thank God, because I look at the results, and education is the key as far as I'm concerned. And that's why I got on the board, because I tried to change it. I mean, you had to change the culture. It was very hard. One of the hardest things to do when I got on the board as the first African American ever elected to the school board, one of the things I did was, one of the first things that I got a principal, and that was a fight. You want to see a fight. They were hiring five principals, and I had to fight, really fight, in order to get one African-American principal. That was in 1986 when I was elected. I got an African-American principal, I got an African-American truant officer, and I got an African-American curriculum of director. Walter Fine was the superintendent. That's some of the only help that I had. Even the board was all against me at the time. We fought, and I got it.
Fast forwarding to 2014. Fast forwarding now.
I want to do that because I want to show you. I just want to lay it because in 1986, after we got the first African-American principal, I left the board in 2 years, and what happened? They fired her. We had to fight again in order to get her back on the board. Now, she retired maybe 5 years ago, and we've never had another. Never had another. That was the only one.
So
now what they've done, they've imported two under the new system. They brought one from Newark, and they got a black guy down at Connor School now. I think they have an African-American principal down there. All right? And that happened, I think, when we got an interim black superintendent, okay?
Right.
And I think that's how we got it. But, in Hoboken, Earl, you're absolutely correct. It's a fight. It's an uphill fight every day.
But you get the feeling that, that I watched Dawn Zimmer and the way she runs things in Hoboken, and it's not the same kind of, how can I put it, deliberate racism that you very often see. It's very
institutional.
Yeah, they just don't think about it.
That's right. Oh, no, they think about it because I tell them about it. But unless you got the political capital, they know that we don't have the political capital. Let's say that. Let me say that. Okay? So they ignore it. I can go up to the board meeting. I can yell and I can really scream. I can go to council meeting. But what is it going to do?
Okay.
What is it going to do? Not going to get anybody anything. I mean, you're going yelling and yelling and yelling at these meetings. You got to get involved. You got to get the political capital in order to get things done.
Okay.
And that's what's happening at this point.
African Americans in Hoboken, of the 3%, what is the percentage of your registered voters that actually vote?
I would dare say it's very high. Yeah, but I would say it's about maybe 60%.
That is very high. But let me ask
yep.
you this.
Of the 1,500, I mean, what is it, 1,600?
Yeah, that's not very many. But
no,
know,
it's not many.
But there seems to me that the people of Hoboken are under the minority groups in Hoboken are under a sort of an assault. That
yes.
And is what, if any way is there to counteract that? What can you do?
Well, one of the things that I'm doing now, I have two things that I'm trying to do. I'm trying to initiate two lawsuits at this time. Okay, the police department, for instance. We have no black superiors now left in the police department at all, okay? And unless you have, you got to have people in every part of government. It's no ifs, ands about it. You got to fight from the inside. It's hard sometimes to fight from the outside. And I know what it is to be ostracized. But one of the things that we have to do, we have to get these guys to take the test. Now, when they take the test, like with the fire department the other day, there's a guy that she just skipped over. She just passed the guy over because the fire chief had two sons that he had to get on the job. Two sons, I said. He skipped this kid. I'm fighting the kid in order to sign to file a lawsuit. You know how hard it is to get these guys to file lawsuits? Because they're afraid. They're afraid if they do get on, he's telling me, oh, if we get on the job, it's going to be hard for us. No, please. I'm trying. I don't know if you know Luis Zayas, Earl.
Yeah.
You know
yes.
Luis Zayas, the attorney?
Yes, I do.
I already sent two guys up to him. We're trying to get some lawsuits started in the police department and in the fire department. All right? You got to get blacks. You got to get African-American involved. Now, you use the rule of three, and if you skip that person, right, you can, legally.
Well, let's give an explanation to our audience about that. We're talking about the civil service list. And the
That's
way
correct.
That is, you can actually be first on the civil service list.
Right.
But the way it works, you have a choice of taking the top three. Usually the only way around that is if the person at the top is also a veteran. Veterans always have precedence on the civil service list. But if there isn't that issue, then they can just decide, well, we're going to skip these two, even though they're at the top of the list, and we'll take number three, which is at the bottom of the list.
Exactly.
That's correct.
Three.
But here's a big thing, like I just said to you, and it's there. It's black and white. In this last class, the fire chief had two sons that were on the list, and they skipped this black guy, okay?
And you're saying
and they made
both?
Yeah, not all at the same time. They have one class, and then they'll wait for 5 months. They don't even make the next class. But now here's the thing. You know, some of these kids, they're afraid to fight. How do you... You don't know how I try to get them to fight, but they're afraid to fight. And what are you going to do? You have to fight in the courts.
They have that problem, and I saw that happening even in Jersey City, where, you know, I think of some of the stuff that's happened over the years that I've watched. There was a fire, a kid to become a firefighter in Jersey City. And, you know, this is why we need mentors. He went to take the test. And somebody, as we say on the street, pulled his coat and said, look, they're going to give you they want you to take a urinalysis. He said, now you go and get a urinalysis, but make sure you get your own separate urinalysis.
Exactly.
So and he went up and he got a urinalysis, and then he went to Dr. Gibbs, and you remember Dr. Gibbs on Clinton. He went there and he had another urinalysis taken. Well, eventually, it came back that his urinalysis from the department showed up positive for drugs. He said, no, that's not possible because I have another urinalysis of my own. And the way this urinalysis came to him, they didn't put it in his jacket. They wrote it on the outside of his jacket. Oh, this sounds crazy.
No, it's true. I hear you loud and clear.
You see.
I hear you loud and clear. Another point in fact is this other day, if you look in the USA paper, they say that an African American is 10 times likely to be arrested in Hoboken than anywhere else. Did you saw that?
No, I did not see that.
I did.
That was a couple of weeks ago.
Yes.
Now, that happened, they're referring back to 2012. Now, Earl, you know that, you know, figures don't lie, lie a figure sometimes. You know, you can take a report and you can write that report all kind of way, and you send it into the FBI. All they got is that report that you sent them. Now, this is the FBI analysis, but the FBI didn't come and do that report. You understand?
Yes.
Now, back in 2012, if you remember, there was a big they had a police. The police were marching against the mayor in the city because she was getting ready to demote all these cops.
Yes, I remember.
So there was a big that they were going to get demoted, and they were going to get laid off. So what they did, the housing authority, they had some money. They hired the cops down in the housing authority. So what happened? The cops go down there because now they got getting laid off, and these guys are going to work. So they started working, and then they had that trespassing, you can't come on the property. So the numbers shot up, okay? Now, all the director had to do is explain exactly where it's coming. It's not really discrimination because I knew exactly what's going on. I saw it, and nobody came to me and ever made one complaint that they were discriminated against or they were brutalized. But they could take one arrest and arrest that guy five times. You know what they do, Earl?
Yes.
You know what they do? And then you look like it's all these arrests. You ain't got but 1,500 people in the whole town. But how many arrests you got?
Gene, hang on.
It's unbelievable.
Gene,
the figures are true, but you got to look at how they acquire those figures.
Gene, we got to go to a break. Hold, just stay where you are. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
You're listening to content developed by the GoPro Radio Network, the fastest growing network in the galaxy. GoPro Radio Network. Listen to the voices in your head.
We interrupt this broadcast to bring you a great opportunity. If you have an event, product, service, talent, or something important to say, now is your chance. You can have your very own radio show. Whether you're just starting out or a veteran looking for a professional platform to enhance your presentation and following, the GoPro Radio Network is the premier place to cultivate and share new and exciting content. We can help you grow your audience and keep it growing long after your first broadcast. Now you have a voice. Call 212-696-8562 or visit www.goproradio.com and you'll be amazed at how easy and affordable it is to have your very own professional radio show on the fastest growing network in the galaxy. GoPro Radio Network. Listen, the voice is in your head.
What if you can have an entire team of skilled professionals to help your business grow? Admin, accounts, marketing, and more, but only pay for the exact amount of support you need at virtually the same cost you'd pay for one full-time employee. With Virtual Professions, you can. One contact, one number gets you a team of virtual professionals for exactly what your business needs. It's 1-888-315-VPRO. That's 1-888-315-8776. Or online at www.virtualprofessions.net. Virtual Professions Incorporated, because you mean business.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's time for the Earl Morgan Hour. Brace yourself.
Welcome back to the Earl Morgan Hour. This is the co-host, Tinya Bland. Again, Happy New Year, Earl.
Happy New Year. Happy New Year, Tinya.
Eugene, we're going to shift gears just a little bit, so I want you to hang on.
Go ahead.
The NAACP Political Action Chair, I'd like to know what you've done with the NAACP recently, because we did it together. And the second thing I want to hear about you know what's going on in Jersey City, Bayonne, and Hoboken. Talk to us about what you see the future holding for the NAACP on these local levels.
You mean the individual branches?
Well, I'll take the last one first. I don't want to comment on Bayonne, not Jersey City, because, I mean, they have their own problems, and I don't know what their problems are. So I personally wouldn't comment on their action or how their action or inaction, because I don't know, you know, exactly what's happening. As far as Hoboken is concerned, I can tell you that we are doing a few things. You know, Tina, I took a bus down to the march on the 13th, and in order to incorporate the whole county, I invited Jersey City NAACP and Bayonne to go down to the march, and you were one of the persons that went down, and that's when I met you at that march. And the march was against police violence, and it was a great march. It was a nonviolent march, and these are the type of marches that I've always been involved with, and I think that I always will be involved with. And again, I said sometime, even as a cop, there were certain you know, the police department would always try to ostracize me because I was a cop and president of the NAACP. Even the chief, they would say that, well, you know, it's a conflict. I said, well, prove it. And they could never prove it was a conflict. They would just talk that. They would try to use that to intimidate you. But it never worked with me anyway. I have two lawsuits that I'm hoping to start. And I'm still trying to get you have to talk, you know, first of all, they have no money, like the average person, to go and get a lawyer, and sometimes you have to pay retainings and everything else. But I have some lawyers that work with me, like I have my legal advisor for the Hoboken NAACP, who's Bill Aiello, and who's a tremendous help to me on a lot of legal things that I do. And I have him, and we're looking to start some lawsuits. You can make noise in the street, but you have to win these battles in the court. And I think that's what we have to take, and a lot of times we have to bring it to them, because they're not going to, the people just, it's hard. It's really hard to get people to fight. And they have that fear for whatever reason. They have it. So I'm looking to start to get two lawsuits going. One, what they just did with the police department, they had the Hispanics that sued, and about 2 weeks ago they made three Hispanics on the top of the list before they can make, they had a competitive test. And before they can make anybody on that test, because these three Hispanics sued, they had to make the three of them first. They made the three of them, which we have two African Americans that are on the list now to become promoted to sergeant. But now we have to wait until next week, and then the week after, because now they start making the promotions already. So I'm hoping that nobody gets skipped this time, and that they go right ahead and they make, because we have two African Americans that would be on the list for sergeant. So we're watching that very, very close, and that we might have to have some action on. I don't know yet at this point, but I'm watching it very close. And I'm trying to get the guy who was passed over as a fireman, trying to encourage him to file a lawsuit. And I also have another lawsuit that I just sent it to EEOC, and I just got it back from EEOC. They had, since 2012, this gentleman went and took the test to become a CDL driver. You know, CDL driver is a specialized field, and we don't have any African Americans in that field. So he took the test. He had his license. He applied for the job. They didn't hire. They didn't even fill the position. They waited for 2 years because we was watching it. Last year they filled the position. When they filled the position, we filed with EEOC. EEOC came in. They all of a sudden they didn't have the application. They couldn't find his application, and that was a violation because you have to hold the application on file for 2 years. This was only 6 months after we filed. They can't find the application. I mean, these are the things that we go through. So I have the attorney, and he's working on that. We have that case that's going on at this time. Okay. And there's a lot of things, but we can't just fight all these battles. You understand?
because our time is limited, we want to hit several categories. So the next front, I want to know what you're doing with education.
With who?
NAACP. What is your branch doing in the form of education to get those African-American leaders back in the position, well, at least new ones there, since the time when your children were in school has been quite some time because your children are grown now. So what are we doing currently?
Well, what we're doing is we're hoping that we can, first of all, you have to have people who's going to stand up to run, people who are qualified that's going to run for these offices, and we have to encourage the community to come out to vote. Voting, if it's for education or it's for city council or anything else, it's very important. We have that block of vote. If we can get a block of voting, we use it. All right? And we try to get involved, as you say, with other people in order to try and make it a stronger block. This is the only thing that we can do, all right, is to get qualified candidate and support them. We can't support them as far as the NAACP, but we can support them as African Americans in the city, and that's what we'll do. We advertise, we make sure that we try to get everybody out to vote, and we can't tell them who to vote for from this side of the fence, but there's other, you know, there's other avenue out there that's working towards supporting candidates. So you have to get the candidate and you have to get them involved. And that's what we're doing. We're making those moves as I speak.
Having debates, what is the NAACP's political action doing? Are they having forums and debates to educate the public on the candidates?
Like I just said to you, we have our focus in the community is the Mount Olive Baptist Church, you know, on Washington Street, and we try to focus everything through that. I'm not going to have debate because we don't have the vote. We don't have the vote, what I'm saying to you. Not just looking at the African-American vote, but I'm not going to have a forum. They have forum. With those forum, all we have to do is go and we can support it. We don't have to have the forum. It's not that important, I don't think. I think what's important is try to educate the people to vote, and that's what we try to do.
So how?
In Jersey State, it's a different thing. You have a bigger base. You can go fishing.
Come on, Gene. We're not in Jersey City. We're asking about Hoboken. So
no, I just said we don't have that. We don't have the people here.
We don't want to know what you don't have. I just want specificity on exactly what you're doing so our audience can be clear.
Yeah, I just told you what we're doing very clear. We work for the churches, and we try to get things done that way.
So let me ask you this. Since you're working through the churches, that's a good strategy. If the churches are involved, if the ministers have a vision, if they're willing to get down there in the trenches and help, how is that working there? Because we have some issues with that from time to time here. So how is that
working? Yeah, I understand. We only have two African-American churches in Hoboken. We have one on Washington, which is a large church, and then we have one that's down in the Housing Authority. And those are the only two churches that we have in the city of Hoboken, two black churches. All right? So up on Washington Street, Reverend Williams, he's also on my executive board, okay? And he's also the chaplain of the NAACP. So we do a lot of things through the church. We're doing two things right now. We're getting ready to start to have a scholarship. We're going to try to give up something like $10,000 in scholarship. We're going to get everybody involved. And probably it's going to be Jersey City schools and all because it's going to be for Black History Month. And that's one of the projects that I'm trying to be trying to educate the kids that way through these scholarships, trying to bring them all in so once we can get their attention. So we're looking in February to start that and give out some scholarships.
Okay. You've
already. And Earl, I like you and Tina to sit on the board, I mean, on this, because what I'm going to do, what I'm hoping to do, and I'm still trying to put it together, is I want it to be a countywide, all the high schools, okay? Because I just honored one of the young ladies from St. Dominic Academy at my affair last week. So I want this to be a countywide thing. And maybe we can get more. See, we can't do it by ourselves. I think me and you had a private conversation, Earl. And I think that we have to lean on Jersey City for that African-American support, okay, when we're talking countywide. And that's the conversation, Tina, I'll have with you, that that way we can help, everybody can help one another. We could never get anybody elected here on a countywide basis unless we had the forces of the entire county.
Yeah, and that's all the Democratic Party, which is not, you know, it's
sort
of...
Look at the African-American population.
Yeah, but, you know, you're right about that. It's going to have to take, you know, there's... I have this saying that I have beat to death. People are probably sick of hearing me say it. But Malcolm X once said that black people have to be like the wolf. They have to hunt in packs.
Right.
And I think you're a prime example of that in Hoboken. You don't have a large enough pack. We have to find
right.
to make that larger, to have a bigger
That's correct.
Of an impact.
That's correct.
You know, if we have the numbers in Jersey City, and we certainly have them, but just think about this, Gene, and I just want you to, if you can, just think about this. You talked about the NAACP in Bayonne, Hoboken, and Jersey City, the three municipalities, all cities. But, you know, there are a lot of other municipalities in in Hudson County
That's right.
that have no black people. How does it
right.
true in all of my life, how do they manage to do that?
Well, you know, you saw up in North Bergen, the fight that we had in North Bergen. Oh, you're aware of that. We fought the fire department up there and won. The NAACP won. All right? We fought them for the police department. In fact, Snelling was the first African-American police officer because of that consent decree that they had was in North Bergen. Then we got some black firemen, but it's a battle. It's a battle. I get cases from Union City. I just fought a case from Union City for a Hispanic, Dominican family, okay? And we were able to negotiate a settlement with the outgoing superintendent of school. So even West New York, Union City, they look, if they don't have any NAACP, they automatically come to Hoboken. And I can show you quite a few battles that we have had and we have fought, all right? I fought Union City, I fought North Bergen. All right? Now, I don't go out west, you know, because in Kearney and East Orange, I've never had a call. But I have had calls from the northern part of Jersey, and we did respond when we get calls like that. So I respond to North Hudson on any calls that come in, regardless of what it is, as long as it's civil rights, I will respond.
To contain the number of African Americans, especially. To certain
yeah, but we have. I don't have. I don't get the call. You got to get the call.
Yeah.
If I get the call, I'll respond. I got the call. I got quite a few Hispanic calls, like I said to you, and I have responded.
Okay.
Okay.
Talk to us about the two African American churches that you work through in Hoboken. At this point, are there any churches that are white that you can and will work in?
Oh, I have, sure. I work with St. Francis. You know, I've worked with these churches, absolutely.
And you still are, correct? Because I was at the Freedom Fund banquet that Hoboken held, and it was very well organized. Thank you very much. And also the group that I brought with me to the march, very well organized. How large is your group your membership in Hoboken? What are your numbers?
I don't know exactly what the number is, but if you call me on the phone, I'll tell you. I have to look at my book to tell you.
Okay.
You honored a young lady named Dominique. Can you give us her brief synopsis of her history and why?
Who's Dominique?
Yeah. She was a young lady that was honored at the Freedom Fund Banquet.
Billy Sophie. Sophie.
So give us a brief synopsis on her, please.
Right. Well, I met this family. Her brother went to one of the Catholic schools in Hoboken, and the brother had a what happened was they took the kid and took him to have him examined, thought that he was under the influence because she said the teacher said he fell asleep in the class or whatever it was. And the mother called me up, and I went down to the school, and I got the archdiocese and everybody else involved. because there's no way that you're going to take a kid out of school and take him to the doctor and have him examined, and you didn't even call the mother.
No,
so we went down to school, and they sent their lawyers from the archdiocese, and we had a long discussion for a couple of days. Well, the mother felt that the most important thing that she wanted was satisfaction, so she was satisfied with the end results. So sometimes we don't have to expose a lot of things because it probably would affect the child. My most important thing was to make sure that this child was not affected because of what they did to him. We went to him, and we were able to, with the archdiocese, we were able to take, the mother was very satisfied. That's how I met the family, and I met the sister who was going to the school at the time, and she went to St. Dominic High. So I gave that family an award. They're such a nice family. It was unbelievable. And, you know, they're not American. They were Africans. So, you know, that's all our time. And now we became good friends. You know, now we're friends. And that's how I met that young lady.
Okay.
Okay. But to me, Gene, what has to happen here? And you're right about Jersey City having its own set of problems. Lord knows that's true.
Everyone.
And Hoboken, which is even a little further out there than Jersey City with the way their branch works. But I still go back to my Malcolm X analogy of the woke. Somehow we have to overcome that, which is very difficult, and begin to look. There's more, you know.
I agree with you. You don't have an argument with me on that. I totally agree with you. I totally agree.
We're just about out of time. So I have to thank you very much for being on. You will be back. You promised me that? Because we haven't even begun to scratch the surface.
I'll be more than happy. And thank you, Tina.
My pleasure, as always.
And Gene, Happy New Year. Happy New Year from Tina. And you tell Bill Ayala, whose name you mentioned, who I know very well, I said Happy New Year, and I'll get him next time.
I certainly will. Thank
right.
you.
Okay, thank you, folks. Now, there's an example of a town that's in battle that no one knows about, that I intend to see, that much more of what Gene has said will come to light on these microphones and in the Jersey Journal. Because we've been very derelict with handling this. He's been fighting a very lonely battle over there, and that's not fair.
That's why I thought it was so important that we have another city on.
Right, and I'll tell you something. With all of his difficulties, Gene is a very skillful organizer.
Oh, God.
and, you know, what he's been talking about he did was very hard to do. And you have to thank him for that. We're just about out of time. I just want to mention one more time the Alive and Kicking 55, Alive 55 and Kicking, which will be on 60 Minutes Sunday night at 7 p.m. One of Jersey City's own, Renee Walker, who is also a member of the Astor Place Neighborhood Association, longtime resident of Astor Place. That's where I first met her.
And her mother was our committee woman.
Right. But and her and Tina actually graduated from high school together.
Yes, we did.
So we will see you again next week. We will have a great show for
Earl,
you.
Earl, what do you want in 2015 that you didn't have in 2014? Really quick.
I want more unity in the community.
Very good. Very good. So right. To everyone, we wish you prosperity, the ability to work harder, and success. Stay healthy until next week.
Thank you very much, folks. We're out.